Hello there, my friend. Glad you're with me. We've got outtakes from the public forum hosted by WFSU. I've got Inam Sakina with us in the first hour talking about safe spaces at college campuses around the country. And Miriam Dady's got another guest in her business spotlight, so stay with me.
Tallahassee Talks with Brian Cerny, brought to you by Widen Glass, Tallahassee's first name in glass for your home or office, and by Merry Maids. Call Merry Maids. Relax. And it's done.
So, what are you going to do?
I don't know. My insurance company is telling me to take it to this one shop, but I don't know if that's the best thing to do.
It's your choice. It's not up to them. Have you told Jerry?
No, he loves that car. I wanted to take it to someone who would make it perfect, just the way it was, you know?
Yeah, well, you know Dan Hendrickson, right?
Dan Hendrickson.
The guy we met at that chamber thingy we went to, remember? He owns Capital City Collision Center. He was talking about the whole Gain Street thing, because he's down there by the stadium on Lake Bradford Road.
And you think they do good work?
You don't remember? Bobby's Jeep got rear-ended coming home from school.
Oh, that's right.
We had Dan fix it. It was great. And they're great to work with. And the guy in the paint shop is really cute.
Capital City did that.
Yep. I've got his card here somewhere. Here.
Okay. Capital City Collision Center.
Online at CapitalCityCollisionInc.com or call 575-9202. We're here. We've got all kinds of interesting things to talk about, and with very interesting people, for that matter. Some of the cool things going on around town, my friend. This week at Lemoyne Arts Center over there, the Center for Visual Arts, as it's formally known. Formerly known. Right, whatever. So here we have the student art exhibition. The student art exhibit. How about that? The 31st annual senior portfolio competition. Anyway, these are art exhibits going on now at Lemoyne, starting this last Thursday, the 1st, and continuing on for several weeks out. What else do we know about this? Spring break camp for Lemoyne is now taking registrations. Better hurry up, though. This is coming up March 12th through the 16th during spring break. You can sign up for spring break camp with Lemoyne. Learn about Rubik's Cubes and kaleidoscopes and, I don't know, they're going to be making all kinds of very cool things. Reboot toys? I don't know what that is. March 12th through the 16th, go to Lemoyne's website and you can register there. Let's see. Do we know the website? I think we do. It's very simple, really. It's lemoyne.org. LEMOYNE.org. And they've got winter studio classes. Registration still available for Smoke, Sawdust, Sagar and Raku workshops with Nancy Jefferson. So you can do that. That happens on Saturdays, three Saturdays here in March, the 3rd, 10th, and 24th from 10 to 3. Good old Lemoyne Center for the Visual Arts, our good friend Ann Kozoliski. She's such a stalwart individual. Good person, talented artist in her own right, too. Well, let's see here. This is by way of Matt Cavell over there at the county talking about county and career source capital region offering summer jobs for youth. So if you're getting out of school here for the summer, you can apply for positions across many county departments, including the library, emergency medical services, MIS, parks and recreation. And all of these positions are going to be between 20 and 25 hours a week. Pay 8.25 per hour. That's not bad. Beats me. Summer employment will run from Monday, June 11th through Friday, July 13th. You get to serve right alongside dedicated public servants of Leon County Summer youth get much more than a paycheck, says Vincent Long, county administrator. Working alongside our paramedics, librarians, and so many other professionals, youth not only serve the community, they'll build necessary skills. So what do? Well, apparently what you need to do is you can either call a phone number, you can go to their website, apply now at leoncountyfl.gov/summer youth. Got that? leoncountyfl.gov, summer youth. Deadline is March 26th, so you better get on that. If you have questions, need to call somebody, 606-2430, 606-2430. You can contact Kay Pelt Walker, is your contact person, Leon County Volunteer Services. And she's at a different number. Oh, okay. Well, let's just stick with that first one, 606-2430. It's easy to remember. Let me tell you also about something called Juke Joint Jam. This is cool. This is a celebration of the Barrow Hill history, the Barrow Hill community and all of that, that goes back at least a century and a half, I think, or so. This would be the post-antebellum period. So this is being fostered by Dr. Sandra Thompson, who is a legacy member. Juke Joint Jam happens in June, the 1st through the 3rd. Getting the word out now. It's kind of a fundraiser, and it's also a celebration of Black history in relation to this particular African-American community. And we'll have more for you on that, but you might want to make note of it now. June 1st to the 3rd is the Juke Joint Jam. All right? So we'll keep you up to date on that sort of stuff. Further into the show, I've got this conversation with a rather remarkable young lady. She's a student at Florida State University in medical school. Her name is Inam Sakina. Inam Sakina. She is very articulate and pretty clear-minded when it comes to establishing shared spaces. So there's been a lot of discussion of late college campuses and other organizations, but especially college campuses declaring safe spaces. Well, she's saying, yeah, we don't need to be safe. We don't need to isolate ourselves from one another any further. You know, we might hear something that we find offensive or disagreeable in some way. Rather, she's saying what we really need are shared spaces in which disagreements are okay as long as we're willing to hear each other out. And so that's been her initiative. She's taken this up with university officials. In fact, she reports directly to the president's office. I think she's the only campus organization that does so. And she's called it the Power of We. Inam Sakina. She'll talk with us at length here in this first hour of the show. So you want to stay tuned for that. Interesting concept because, of course, there's been a fair amount of criticism issued on behalf of those who say certain points of view ought not be represented in any way, shape, or form. They just shouldn't make it to the public forum. And I'm going to ask her about that. You know, if somebody is a white supremacist, if someone represents a perspective, let's say, that is extreme on any given topic, race-related, let's say, or regarding ethnicity or sexual morals, marriage, gay marriage, etc., you know, is it ever permissible for us to hear what we might otherwise declare to be way outside of cultural norms? I mean, it's just not something we're going to entertain. It's not something we're going to tolerate. So we'll get her perspective on that. I think you'll find the conversation rather compelling. Speaking of forums, in the second hour, we'll have a complete opportunity, I would say, or a thorough opportunity to hear from our county and city commissioners, this Village Square hosted, sponsored public forum that was hosted at WFSU last week. And so if you're among the 200 or so people who were in attendance, or maybe a few thousand more that actually watched it on WFSU's air or listened to it on radio, or maybe you got it on Facebook, well, then you kind of know what happened. If you're among the 282,000 of us then that did not hear it or were not in attendance, you might want to stay tuned for this, because you're going to hear some rather interesting discourse go on between the moderator Skip Foster, who brought questions to county and city commissioners. Be interesting to, for you to hear Commissioner Ziffer's comments about that. And Skip did an interesting bit of business there in pinpointing some of the commissioner's comments in regard to this, and how it, in his words, was causing the city commission to perform in a dysfunctional way. I think you'll find it worthwhile. So stay with me in the second hour for that. And of course, we've got Miriam standing by. She'll be with you here in just a moment with another guest in the business spotlight. So stay with me. You're in tune with Tallahassee Talks with Brian Cerny.
Witten Glass has been taking care of business since 1945. When you call Witten Glass, you're dealing with experienced, reliable professionals who offer only the best. Like Witten's top-of-the-line bath enclosures that provide style and luxury at an affordable price. Eye-catching storefronts are a specialty at Witten Glass. We'll help you design it and install it. Witten Glass, the first name in glass replacement. Call 222-5781.
Hi, I'm Melissa Bruner, and you're listening to Tallahassee Talks with Brian Cerny.
Time now for Tallahassee Business Spotlight, brought to you by Tiffany Hamilton.
Hello there. This is Miriam Dady, and this is Tallahassee Business Spotlight. It is a beautiful time in Tallahassee right now. All of the pollen is beginning to settle on our windshields, and our taxes should be done and in the mail right about now. I have a guest for the Business Spotlight, Marvin Garland, who is the owner and operator of a business-to-business, B2B CFO. If you're in business, this is a gentleman you want to meet. Marvin, thank you for being with us this morning.
Well, thank you for having me. Yes, you mentioned that dreaded word, taxes, that nobody wants to always have to address, but it's also great when you can get it behind you.
It is. Now, business owners, and we talked about this a little bit before, we're really good at providing our goods and services. We might not be as good at running our business. Now, and the reason I mention taxes is not because you do taxes. I know that's not your area, but you can kind of take that information and that organization we've gathered and give a business person some guidance, right?
Correct.
Tell me a little bit more about that.
Okay, yes. So you kind of brought up the tax piece. So yes, most business owners don't go into business to be an expert on accounting or insurance and all those things, but it is a huge part of running their business. So yes, having up-to-date financials, just having a financial statement where you know where all your cash is, where your money, what you owe, and keeping that up to date, and of course you know that it's accurate, is critical to running your business. As someone once quoted, that I can't recall the name, but you know, cash isn't cash if it isn't cash. So you have to, you really have to obviously have cash to run your business, but you got to know where it's at, and then of course know what to rely on as you continue to run your business.
So if I have a thriving business and I've got the phone is ringing off the hook, I've got lots of clients, why do I need you?
Well, first of all, many times profitable businesses aren't always run with cash, or businesses may be growing and you're finding some great new clients and you're adding business, but you might, as you go to do your tax return, you might find out you might not be profitable. Mm. And I only mention that this time of year, having to do your taxes helps to have some accountability if you're not doing some things regularly. So if you've just gotten your tax return done or you're in the process, and once you get that information back, there's a surprise, as in either you owe taxes you didn't know about, or or some other verses might give you a clue that maybe you need to have your financials more accurate or need some assistance in knowing more about running your business.
So what do you do when I come and I bring my shoebox of receipts and everything else and I put it down in front of you? How do you make sense of that for me? Do you create a plan for me, or is it a one-time shot? What happens?
Well, no, it can be, typically it's someone is coming that maybe there's a current issue that's really bothering them and they want to get that done. But then it could be an ongoing relationship to just check in or address issues going forward. But let's say we start with, usually it's looking at someone's financial statement. You know, if they're profitable, do they want to, are they trying to increase profitability, or maybe they need financing and they need to put their, you know, again, organize everything to get in front of a bank or whomever. So one, organizing and just making sure that data is correct. And then from that, helping them to better understand how they make money.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so if they're selling a certain product or multiple products, to really collect the right information to know, because again, things are incurred over time. You know, you're collecting bills over time and you have all these different moving parts, and sometimes it's hard to draw a line at a certain time and know, yes, I'm making money off of this product, or I'm not, or should I price something differently?
So if I want your services and I'm my business just operating like crazy, would I contract with you to look at my business maybe on a monthly basis, on a quarterly basis? How would you keep me in line?
Well, good question. First of all, I offer, and many others may offer, I'll come out and do a free analysis to kind of give you an idea. So typically starts with a project where you may do something on a weekly basis just to get started, because you can't solve every problem or address everything right away.
Right.
So it typically will, you know, maybe weekly to address something. And then after you get maybe your financials correct, so then a good point would be is to meet monthly. Could be 30 minutes or a couple of hours to review those financials. Is it accurate? And then maybe do go through and do a comparison of what others in your peer group, you know, what are their numbers? What are their metrics?
Mm-hmm.
You know, what percentage do they pay for cost of goods or employees?
Gotcha.
And so those things start to help as you're planning to go forward. And but again, one, it's helping to make sure you're looking at accurate information, helping you interpret what that really means, because
mm-hmm.
again, there are a lot of moving parts. This is typically not your expertise as an owner.
Yeah.
Spend time doing something else.
Do you help people buy and sell businesses?
Yes.
Okay.
My role is usually to help them either evaluate the opportunity to buy a business, reviewing their financials, due diligence, and or getting prepared to sell their business in terms of, if you think of the same concept with buying or selling a house, there are certain things you're going to do to look for a house. And if you go to sell your house, you probably might need to, you know, spruce it up,
you're
paint
the
it,
four-point
do something
inspection.
Different. Yes.
Yeah.
Get it ready that where it may be appealing to someone else other than, you know, your family that's been living in that house.
This is kind of a neat concept. I like that you're you've distinguished yourself from just a tax preparer or a CPA or a payroll service, and you're really putting yourself as the one looking at a business under the microscope, kind of see if that person is on the track they want to be on, right, with their business.
Exactly. I've had many people that I've known, from family to others, that find themselves at a certain point they aren't on track, or something happens.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's so wonderful to be in front of someone and maybe get them back on track or address an issue before they have one. But, yes, helping them to realize where they are and really understand, so then they can make changes and address that, and then see them continue to grow and really meet what they want to do.
So, folks, if you find yourself mystified by the business side of the business you own, you might want to reach out to Marvin Garland. He owns B2B CFO. He has a email address. Can I share this, Marvin?
Yes.
It is marvingarland@b2bcfo.com. And just sit down and have a cup of coffee with him. See what he thinks of your business. I promise he'll be kind. Thanks a lot for being here, Marvin. I appreciate you giving a kind of a demystifying business for us.
Oh, the pleasure's all mine, and I have enjoyed the opportunity. Thank you very much.
Well, have a great one. And Tallahassee, thank you for listening in. This is Miriam Dady with Tallahassee Business Spotlight.
More beauty, less bully. Tallahassee Talks with Brian Cerny.
Inam Sakina is a rising senior and presidential scholar at Florida State University. She majors in interdisciplinary social sciences on the pre-medicine track and aspires to pursue an integrated medical and public policy career. Inam is the founding chair of The Power of We at Florida State University, which in and of itself is an historic university-wide nationally recognized initiative launched under the auspices of the university president. Her current research interests center on identifying public policy avenues for addressing inequities in health outcomes, and she is currently partnering with the College of Medicine at FSU on a project examining racial disparities in infant mortality rates. Inam was also recently recognized, selected as a Florida Gubernatorial Fellow by the Executive Office of the Governor, and will serve in a year-long senior-level policy role at the Florida Department of Health. Let's welcome our guest this morning, Inam Sakina. How are you, my friend?
I'm well. Thank you for having me.
I am delighted to get to meet you after having read about you a bit. So tell us a little bit where you got started with all this. Were you thinking about a career in medicine, and then this perspective sort of came at you, or was it that way from the beginning, I guess?
That's an excellent question. So I entered into my undergraduate journey not knowing what my destination was. And I was grateful in some respects that it was that way, that I wasn't starting the journey with the destination in mind. I was looking to really immerse myself in the journey itself, in the experiences that the journey would allow me to engage with. And then through that process, really identify where I felt like my aspirations should lie. Mm. And so I think in this changing world, one of the things that we see is that what's most important is skill sets, not necessarily facts and content. Mm. You know, we have information at our fingertips. We can Google any question
anytime
that we have.
We want. Yeah.
It's literally at our fingertips. Mm. And so when we think about what types of things we want to see in young graduates as they begin to enter into the world, mm-hmm. what we want them to have so that they can be equipped to really change and shape the world, it's really skill sets. Mm. And so to me, it was about identifying what am I compelled by, what am I good at, and then how can I leverage this to do good in the world.
So you began
open
your
to being shaped by what I would experience.
Were you raised that way? I mean, you grew up in a family where
I was.
You were 5 years old and they were saying, you know, you ought to think about how the world is put together.
Yes, absolutely. I think I was raised with this prevailing commitment to serve the world, to serve humanity. And so in our dinner table conversations, I can recall from a very young age that we talked about the world.
You have siblings?
I do. I have a younger brother. Mm. And we talked about what was happening in the world, what we felt like we would do if we were in a position to impact the world. What would be our decisions? What
See,
would be our...
at my family's dinner table, we were just talking about what reruns were on.
So I'm very fortunate. My father happens to be an academic. He's a professor at the University of North Florida. And so the importance of academics, the importance of critical
thought...
You
didn't have a chance, did you?
...was instilled in me from the very beginning. And so, yes, we talked about the
but
reruns.
But, Dad, I just want to learn how to...
We talked about sports.
Hula hoop.
We talked about football. That's actually one of, that's my family's other religion, football.
Ah, very good. Well, yes. You fit right in here at Tallahassee. Good.
Yes. And so I arrived with all of this insight, really from my family, from my experiences. My family was very pluralistic in their outlook. We were exposed to a variety of different faiths, a variety of different people from very different backgrounds and life experiences. We attended interfaith discussions. We attended panels and lectures and public conversations about issues that were facing the city of Jacksonville. And so I feel very lucky to have had all of that instilled in me before I even arrived, because I think I really was able to capitalize on all of those to make sense of what I was experiencing on my own.
As a faculty member, your father teaches, what you said, at University of
North Florida.
North Florida. Mm-hmm. And what is his area?
He teaches finance.
How curious. Because by description, you would have to assume, okay, well, he's got to be teaching sociology or cultural anthropology
or
something.
Absolutely.
Here he's teaching finance. He does. But he's got that mindset that, or an attitude about the world that says, you really need to be wide open here.
Right. And in some sense, I have come to mirror that. And so my academic trajectory is medicine. But I've found myself engaged in so many different activities and endeavors that you wouldn't necessarily associate directly with medicine. But again, it comes down to really those skill sets and knowing that to impact the world, you have to understand it.
Well, and as I said earlier here, current research interests center on identifying public policy avenues for addressing inequities in health outcomes.
Right.
What does that mean?
So currently in the United States, we spend the most per capita on healthcare compared to all developed countries, and yet our outcomes as a population are among the worst, and the inequities within those outcomes are quite stark. And so we have infant mortality disparities where African American mothers and families experience about 2 to 3 times higher levels of infant mortality rates than their white counterparts. And so when you think about where our country is and our country's premise of equality for all, this unalienable right to life and liberty and the pursuit of happiness, to me it seems like that promise is still unfulfilled. And so that has really underpinned my aspiration to address this. It's really that paradox that animates so much of what I do, that we spend the most and yet our outcomes are among the worst, that we have this promise that we made from our very conception, and yet we're still trying to fulfill it.
We're spending the most, so if the money's not going to the delivery of services to those most in need, where does it go?
So oftentimes it's very inefficient in the way the system works, and so we are spending the most, but we're often spending on treatment as opposed to prevention. We're often spending on the most exciting technologies, the most aggressive interventions, and not thinking about some of the more structural underlying factors that really influence health in more transformative ways than the most exciting medicines and the most exciting treatments. And so there's this term that we use that is social determinants of health. And so what those are things like education, employment, housing, all of these factors actually have more of an influential impact on an individual's health than even their access to a doctor, than even their utilization of healthcare services.
Wow. So we're not investing in preventative aspects of health maintenance, we'll say. We're on the other end of that.
Right.
And is that driven economically? I mean, maybe that's an obvious question, or a loaded question, because it seems to me there might be more money to be made on that end of the the equation, huh?
Absolutely. Well, the economics incentives clearly don't align when we think about it in the short term. But when you think about it in the long term and take a step back, we realize that if we continue in this way, we'll eventually be spending so much on healthcare to the detriment of things like education, of things like social services, and we already are. But if that trend continues, then our country will be in a very perilous place. So long term, I think the economic case is not there. But I think
so. The house is ablaze,
exactly.
And we're going out trying to find more expensive fire extinguishers.
Right.
When in
right.
fact, there's a source to our malady. It's called an open fireplace in the middle of the room, and nobody's attending to that.
Yeah, and to quantify it, some of the developed countries that have among the best health outcomes, they spend about 2 to 1 on social services versus healthcare services. And we actually have the ratio in the exact reverse. And so that's quite telling.
Talking with Inam Sakina this morning, with a great deal of interest in the whole business of not just medicine and healthcare itself, but these predictable, I think, social outcomes. And certainly a pleasure to have her with us. We're going to ask her to stay with me just a bit longer, if you will, and we'll be back with more Tallahassee Talks with Brian Cerny.
May 5th, 1868, General John Logan calls for a national day of remembrance in honor of those slain on the field of battle during the Civil War. May 30th was chosen as the day when Americans across the nation would gather to offer prayers and decorate the graves of these fallen defenders of freedom. In 1968, Congress declared the last Monday in May to be our official Memorial Day, giving thanks for our first responders, law enforcement, and all those in military service who have given the ultimate sacrifice for a grateful nation. From Dr. Eve James at Southern Smiles Family Dentistry in Quincy. For comprehensive family dentistry, call 875-3908. Seller's Tile on Capitol Circle Northeast. For the best design ideas and the highest quality tile, carpet, and hardwood flooring, call 656-8453. And Tallahassee Family Magazine, available at local newsstands and bookstores and online at TallahasseeFamilyMagazine.com.
Now we're really talking. Tallahassee Talks with Brian Cerny.
Welcome back. We've got Inam Sakina here talking about some rather provocative ideas regarding healthcare, particularly as a student of college medicine at FSU. She's involved in several projects. One that we wanted to get into, particularly this the power of we, fascinated with that. Tell us about the power of we.
The power of we is a university-wide initiative that I launched along with a group of diverse, talented, incredible students about 1.5 years ago. And the focus of this initiative is to stem the tides of polarization by creating spaces where we can actually engage across our different ideas, our different identities, and life experiences. This is the only student initiative at FSU that reports directly to and is funded by the Office of the President. And so it's evolved into this unique collaboration between students, faculty, and staff who are equally invested in addressing this defining question that we have to face as a society, which is, how do we navigate our differences? And how do we coexist in a society that really depends on embracing and harnessing our differences?
Being respectful, being civil in our in our tone.
Absolutely. So actually, one of the terms that we've coined is shared spaces. And so there's a lot of controversy around the notion of safe spaces. And instead of wading deep into that controversy, because so many people have different connotations that they
attach it means to be safe,
term, like safe spaces, to us, in our shared spaces, what we value is disagreement. So these spaces are not intellectually safe. They're physically safe, but they're not intellectually safe, because the way we grow is by being intellectually challenged. And so we have to be exposed to a different idea, to an idea that maybe is in opposition to some of our very deeply held beliefs, in order to really recognize and arrive at the truth. And so it's through that engagement, through that interaction with ideas that are different from our own, that we really, I think, can better understand. When we enter into these spaces, the point is not always to agree. So we're almost redefining success. We're not saying that success in these spaces is that we all end up agreeing. It's that we engage despite the fact that we don't. And so when we consider the reality of the Civil War, of course, there was very little common ground to forge between the North and the South, right? A completely different perspective on human life, on human dignity, on slavery. But the idea that we would just walk away from this conversation without having it is, I think it really set a precedent for really overlooking what I think in some sense is the essence of our country. You know, our country was never perfect, but it has always attempted to strive towards perfection. And it was conceived of with this idea of we the people, right? It was conceived of with this inherent recognition of the power in the collective. Now, when those words were inscribed, of course, they weren't referring to me. They weren't referring to women. They weren't referring to people of color. They were just referring to land-owning males. But when you look at how our society has evolved to where now we the people does encompass all of these individuals, I think it is a remarkable testament to the power of human society to change.
And perhaps and to then improve. The validity of that claim, while it was narrowed demographically, we'd say, yet the value of that assertion remains as it begins to encompass all of us. So in this power of we, how do you proceed? Is that a is that a regularly occurring thing, or is it sort of random? I mean,
So it is a university-wide initiative, and it is student-led, student-run, student-curated. So it's by the students, for the students, and there's a board that a team of students that envision the programming, that create the messaging, and that develop these spaces for engagement. And that board is key. That board is diverse ideologically, in terms of identity, in terms of life experience, in terms of campus networks that they belong to. And in some sense, that really was the innovation. That is really what set the course for this initiative to become nationally recognized, because as intuitive as it might be, initiatives like these on campuses don't unfold in this way. Typically, it's one group of students with one type of agenda or one type of perspective that become the champions of the cause. And to us, it was critical that we convened a group that really encompassed and represented all of campus. And all perspectives to curate this so that every message that we sent, every program that we created was as universally resonant as possible. Because one of the things that you realize very early on is that people have so many different interpretations of the things that you say. People look at it through their own lenses. So even a term like diversity has so many different connotations. Some people view it as existential, that it's critical that you recognize diversity, because if you don't, then you're not acknowledging my right to exist. And for others, this is just a buzzword, completely irrelevant to my life experience. And so how do you balance
bring those two together?
And what you do is you actually put both on your team and you have a conversation about, okay, well, why does this word feel so irrelevant to you, and why does this word feel so vital to you? And what you begin to understand is that for the people who have not found any resonance in the word, one of the reasons is because it was never made to feel relevant to their life experience. And a lot of times it was spoken of as a statistic, right, in terms of numbers, in terms of representation. And if you're not a minority, that doesn't feel as immediately important to
you. Right.
But when you start talking about it in terms of a skill set, in terms of this tool that you need to have survive this world, to succeed in this world that is diverse, then suddenly it becomes relevant to you regardless of your background, regardless of your career trajectory. And so that was one of the things that we did very early on. We started redefining diversity as not just a statistic, but a skill set, as not just a token, but a tool, as not just about representation, but about actual engagement.
And in that way, similar to your concerns about healthcare, we'll say, and outcomes there, it's not necessarily the outcome. It is the process by which you arrive at that outcome that is the more critical. As you say, skill set.
Absolutely.
Knowing how to ask the question, how to pursue the question.
Exactly.
How to engage that conversation. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yes. Frameworks.
Because you can take that
important.
Anywhere. Yeah.
Yes. Yes. Recognizing that people have such different frameworks through which they understand the world, I think is really important, because I think that explains so much of our inability to engage. We're looking at things from completely different vantage points.
You really love people, don't you?
I really do. I really do. And I really enjoy the intersection of people. What happens when people have such different ideas and perspectives cross paths?
So when you finish your medical studies, I predict there'll be at least two more PhDs. One of those is going to be cross-cultural anthropology. I suspect that's in there somewhere. But God bless you. This is not only encouraging, it particularly inspiring. Congratulations for all of your accomplishment thus far, and thank you. And I think we should thank your father too for doing a very good job. What's your brother doing, I should ask?
He is an athlete. He's actually the athlete of our family.
There you go.
He's my polar opposite, but such a pleasure to have in my family.
Well, again, good job, folks, for raising two very bright and talented people. And thank you for your contributions here, and continued success to you. We'll be keeping an eye on you as you make progress. Please keep us posted in any way that we can help you get your message out. Our good friend here this morning, Inam Sakina, this remarkable individual who is kind enough to share this time with us this morning. Thank you for being our guest.
Thank you so much for having me.
Folks, you stay with me. I've got more coming up after the top of the hour. You're in tune with Tallahassee Talks with Brian Cerny. We'll be right back.
So if you come to me and say, I want to buy a home, the first thing I do is say, okay, let's talk about the process. What can I afford? Not just the purchase price. What kind of lifestyle do you want to have?
Tiffany Hamilton, broker of Eck and Hamilton Realty, talking about the real estate market in Tallahassee.
Right now, for an investor, in my opinion, we should be looking at affordable housing. What that means is a price point of about $100,000 to $200,000 price range. For the investor, it's a rental income between $1,000 and $1,500 a month max.
Realtor, broker, consultant, Tiffany Hamilton is helping home buyers, investors, and other realtors achieve their individual goals.
Hi, I'm Tiffany Hamilton. Investing in real estate or buying a home has never been more challenging. Even finding solid information you can trust can also be a challenge. That's exactly why I began my career nearly 15 years ago, to help buyers and sellers overcome those challenges. As a broker, as a realtor, or a consultant, if I can help you achieve your goals, it would be my pleasure.
Call 850-366-8433 or online at tiffanyhamilton.com.
The most talked about topics in town, Tallahassee Talks with Brian Cerny.
We're back, we're here, and you are there, and it's all good because we've got lots of good more stuff to talk about. Lots of good more stuff. We've got in our segment six here, I've got this special report that associate producer Alexandra Blackwell has filed. She was in attendance at the protest assembly, I would say it would be a fair description, this assembly of students and parents who made their presence known, their march on the Capitol, in regard to the shootings, the mass slayings in the Parkland community at Marjorie Stoneman Douglas High School. The nation is undoubtedly still in shock, grieving, in whatever capacity you're touched by this, especially if you're related to someone immediately in among those students who were killed. If you have experienced some of this in your own life, in your own way, clearly you're going to have a strong emotional connection there. But I don't think there's any of us that could say we are untouched by the horror and the tragedy and the senselessness and the anger. Yeah. So what we do with all of that then becomes the next question, as is always the case, because we are a nation of many and a nation of plenty of differences of opinion. It's going to be, you know, it's going to be fleshed out over the weeks and months ahead. This time, it's taken on a greater amount of impetus. And so when we had the opportunity with with Alexandra, making it her business to go and have conversation with a few of these people. She was on site, and she'll bring to us her comments, her observations, as she files this report in our segment six for today, including the comments of Mayor Gillum, who was on site. So she was able to kind of work through the crowd and get everybody's take of those that she was able to speak with. She got a kind of overall perspective, I think, that you'll find curious and informative. I think you'll find it motivating in some respects. I did. And when I heard the recordings that she, these conversations that she had. So it is that we find ourselves at a time when, on one hand, we're confronted with horrors of continued violence at the hands of someone who is clearly out of control in many ways. My observation is that he was crying desperately, crying out for connection, crying out for somebody to help him. I'm sorry, but in this case, it's not a matter of somebody being mentally ill, that is to say deranged or out of their mind, psychotic. No, I don't read that. This is a guy who was just angry. And I think he was angry because he was dismissed and felt marginalized. And I think that over a period of time, he did a number of things, both among his associates and with his family and friends and online in terms of his own participation in certain things, social media stuff. All of that screams to me, I'm angry, I'm hurting, I'm going to hurt somebody. You know, I want other people to suffer as much or more than I'm suffering. So how do you get in touch with those people in your life? How do you connect with those people who you find rather disturbing? Well, normally what we do is we look away. We certainly do not want to get closer to that individual. Somebody who clearly has a kind of resident kind of anger and resentment and bitterness and whatever going on. And so we further the problem, I think, because we distance ourselves even further. Now, you may say, well, yeah, but I'm not the guy to embrace this kid. I don't want to get closer to him. Let somebody else do that. Or perhaps I should refer him to a professional. Well, don't we know by record at this point that that was done multiple numbers of times? People visiting him, law enforcement, others being notified, hey, there's something very wrong with this kid. Right. So how is it that somebody who is clearly showing up on everybody else's radar fallen through the cracks? You know, for many years, I was in private practice and provided, several thousand hours of counseling, individual marriage, family counseling. And grateful for the opportunity to be of help as much as I could and as much as I was able, along with some other colleagues, contributing to the welfare of others in that capacity. But there was never a moment, never, in all of the, probably 20 years that I did that, that I ever questioned whether somebody was unreachable. And it just didn't ever occur to me that somebody was completely unreachable, even the most severely disturbed. And, you know, that is not the MO here. This guy was not psychotic. He wasn't delusional. He wasn't hearing voices that we know of anyway. So you wouldn't necessarily treat him in a manner that you would if somebody were in that state of affairs and having him hospitalized. So he's out on the street. But what do you do to try to throw out a lifeline, to knit that sort of connection between him and maybe a body of people? Is there some way in which you can get him plugged into some kind of social setting where he can begin to process all of the anger, all of the hurt, all of the frustration, the confusion, all of that that was clearly going on? But my observations, humbly speaking, over the 20 years that I was in practice, publicly, we turned our back on mental health issues without any question. We've seen the rise of homelessness across America. You know what most of that is attributed to? The fact that we don't have public health facilities that can house people who are psychotic. And they are unemployable because you put them in the kitchen there, you know, cooking spaghetti. And the next thing you know, they're throwing the pot of spaghetti across the kitchen at somebody. So they get fired because they are indeed mentally ill. They're crazy. And they need to be medicated. And they need to be housed. And they need to be monitored. And that is expensive. Yes, it is. Insurance companies, they're not going to pay it. They pushed everybody back into the corner and said, okay, give us the minimum number of days that we can get away with here in treating people. Okay, and so professionals said, I don't know, 28 days. Great. We will pay for 28 days of treatment. And that's where that comes from. It's not a clinical designation. It's not based on research. No, it was a compromise. Because the insurance companies were looking to get out from having to pick up the tab on what it would really take to care for somebody long term and apply real, honest to goodness measures to try to bring some sense of healing into that person's life. Whether it's drug addiction or psychoses, social disorder, whatever. Yeah. So you know what, folks? It's not a high school's problem. It's not a law enforcement's problem. It's not the mental health community's problem. It's our problem. It's what we have to do as a culture, as a society, to say, this is what we're going to do about mental health issues. This is how we're going to treat and care for those among us who clearly need extra help, extra care. We're doing that in all kinds of other subpopulations when it comes to kids or those who, let's say, have suffered some physical injury. All kinds of accommodation. But not for this guy. Stay with me.
When you place a document in someone's hand, it should reach more than their head. It needs to reach their heart with compelling visuals and dramatic presentations right down to the paper it's printed on. Rapid Press reaches the hearts of thousands of people every day with commercial printing and mailing services for organizations that feed and house children, for businesses that bring vital products and services to our community, and for theaters, festivals, and orchestras reaching bigger audiences and bringing joy to life. Rapid Press commercial printers since 1983.
For digital printing, offset printing, finishing, and mailing services, reach for Rapid Press. When you're ready to share your vision, excite your customers, and reach the hearts of your audience, reach for Rapid Press. You'll find them online at rapidpress.com or call 893-7346. 893-7346. Rapid Press, the power of print.
Good morning, friends. This is your friend, Dr. Benjamin Franklin. We're talking with Brian Cerny on Tallahassee Talks.
It started at the Westcott Fountain on Florida State's campus. Mayor Gillum addressed thousands on the importance of gun control reform.
Today is our time to make comprehensive gun reform. Let me hear you say enough is enough.
Enough is enough.
Enough is enough.
Enough is enough.
I believe that we're with y'all. God bless you. Peace and let's get the ball going.
Rousing spirit, camaraderie, anger, and fervor, the march on the Capitol began. Sad, scared, and scarred people walked together, side by side, hand in hand, supporting a safer America. Signs and posters lined College Avenue with words stating, "Protect our kids, not guns. Enough is enough. Never again." And the list goes on. Chanting rang through the streets. This is what democracy looks like. Save our kids. Where's Rick Scott? The never-ending and resounding demand shook downtown Tallahassee like a destructive earthquake. On our way to the Capitol, I asked several participators why they were there and what they wanted to see happen from this initiative. Most responded that they just don't want to be scared anymore.
What needs to change? What do you need to see change? What do you want coming from today?
Basically, I just don't want to be afraid to go to school anymore.
right? Like, I want to see more policies. I want to see stricter gun laws. I want to see background checks.
Now!
You know, I want, you know, I'm not against people
now!
Owning guns. I'm against the wrong people owning guns.
Right, you don't want those guns
now!
To get into the wrong people's hands.
Exactly.
Gun control!
Right.
Can I have your name?
Elizabeth Yabor.
Elizabeth Yabor.
Yeah.
Gun control!
School should be a safe place. In fact, lots of kids look to school as an escape from their lives at home. Why, then, has it taken so long to recognize the need for gun control? Why did it take innocent bodies lying on the hallways of Marjorie Stoneman Douglas High School for action to be taken? Upon reaching the Capitol, I found myself standing alongside several of the victims from the recent school shooting in Parkland. I had the opportunity to interview one. Their demands do not ignore the need for guns used for self-defense. Rather, they promote background checks and banning of assault rifles that are used in military efforts.
In Parkland, Florida, went to Stoneman Douglas, graduated last year. Basically, what I want to see change is background checks and waiting periods and psychiatric referrals.
So you're not asking for guns to be eradicated?
I'm not asking for guns to be taken off the street. I can't believe, and personally, that will do anything to change it. But I do believe that if we have harder restrictions on getting the guns as far as background checks, it shouldn't become impossible. But we need background checks, we need psychiatric checks, and we need other stuff in place.
Great. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Students, teachers, locals, visitors of all ages congregated around the Capitol to listen to those advocating for their cause. Among these speakers were students themselves, speaking about the importance of gun control reform. They were obviously angry, sad, mourning for their lost friends. The rhetoric constantly visited imagery displaying the kids who were viciously murdered the previous week, instilling in each listener the same kind of anger and sadness. I get chills still thinking about it. These children, ages 17 or even younger, that spoke with such eloquence and passion, impressed me so much, and since then I have become heavily invested in their cause.
I'm a sophomore at Marjorie Stoneman Douglas High School. This is a message to our government. You tore down our home. You tore down your home. You robbed us of life and you turned off the lights. You tore down the walls and carelessly took away souls. I will not let you win. On behalf of my school and I now choose to live by choice and not chance. To be motivated and not manipulated. To be useful, not used. And finally, to make changes, not excuses.
Another student, Lizzie Eden, wrote a poem about the awful occurrence that captured the hearts of all the listeners. I cried. No child should be able to speak about watching their friends being slaughtered around them.
I know this is real, but it cannot be true. I wish we could go back and make it undo. We lost 17 angels that night. Yes, 17 angels no longer in sight. But we will continue to fight and persevere and not let us be overrun with fear. We must live every day for those who are not able to and be grateful for all things old and new. Parkland is strong and united. We will make it through together. We are undivided. I love you, school. I love you, family. We will come together in complete amity. This is not the end of our fight. We'll come back stronger and make it right.
Even though the government plans to tear down the building where the shooting occurred and replace it with a memorial, these poor kids will forever be traumatized. The memories of that horrid day, February 14th, 2018, Valentine's Day of all days. Wow. They will never fade. How has it become normal to hear about a school shooting on the news? Why has no change happened since those 49 Orlando friends were brutally murdered at Pulse Nightclub? Why did it take 17 innocent children's lives to realize that assault weapons belong in a war zone, not down a street? A movement for reform, for love, and for a reinstatement of a secure America is finally gaining speed. Our politicians have failed. Now it is time for us, the generation of future American leaders, to take action.
This is a movement. This is a movement because our politicians have failed us.
Yeah.
The adults have failed you.
Yeah.
you will not fail because this is your moment.
Experience, reliability, thoroughness, and professionalism. That's the Merry Maid's way of keeping your home or office at its best. And it's what we have come to expect here at Tallahassee Talks with Brian Cerny. Our studios and offices always shine because Merry Maid's makes the difference, like they do for hundreds of offices and homes in Tallahassee. They'll do just the same, just for you. And they're right here, giving back to our community and giving you extra benefits, like saving you up to $400 on your first cleaning by giving you extra service, and saving an extra 10% when you mention Tallahassee Talks. Their website makes it really easy for you, too. You can schedule a cleaning and make a payment with just a few clicks, any day, any time, day or night, when it's convenient for you. Call Merry Maid's this week, 850-386-2205. That's 386-2205. Or find them online at merrymaids.com.
Hi, folks. I'm Joe Doty with Truck and Car Concepts in Tallahassee. I want to thank all of our first responders, law enforcement, and military for keeping all of us safe. And also want to thank all of our loyal customers and friends for such a fantastic 2017 and looking forward to a very prosperous 2018. Remember, Truck and Car Concepts for all of your aftermarket and auto accessories. Come see us, Truck and Car Concepts, 656-8800, or online at truckandcarconcepts.com.
Bringing you whatever Tallahassee is talking about this week. Tallahassee Talks with Brian Cerny.
Here we are in the last half hour of this here fine radio show, and we were pleasantly surprised to find out of late that this Village Square organized and Chamber of Commerce and Tallahassee Democrats sponsored public forum happened down there at WFSU Broadcast Center, and our good friend Tom Flanagan was kind enough to forward to us these recordings. I want to credit him and WFSU Radio for their contributions here. So I've got for you here some moments from that, what turned out to be a two-hour meeting, particularly in regard to some hot topics, notably the CRA FBI investigation. That was the lead question from moderator Skip Foster. And there was some discussion of the urban tree canopy, urban forest, some of the other things that I thought were noteworthy. We're going to give you the best of that 2 hours in this next half hour of the show. So let's take a listen.
Commissioner Ziffer, addressing a group of Democrats, you recently said the following: "We have a lot to do, but the FBI hangs over everything we do. The commission is pretty dysfunctional right now." You went on to say, "I've heard no complaints about service, but I do hear complaints about us, the electeds, the appointeds at the upper level of management." The question is, how did that happen? How did we get in that position?
I was at an event and I was asked and I gave the answer.
How did we get to that level of dysfunction?
Oh, you want a more broader, global, macro answer. Well, one of the reasons is our newspaper runs a considerable amount of stories, and every time the story runs, no matter what it has to do with, that second or third graph reminds everybody that it says the city is under FBI investigation. As best I can tell, the city's not under FBI investigation. The CRA had emails subpoenaed, and I believe there are some people that are under FBI investigation. So I'm going to separate the city from certain people. I don't know how it cannot weigh on us. It's everywhere. It's where I go. People want to talk about it. They ask me questions. I think that now that maybe that I've said that, and we've not had a meeting since then, that's kind of out there, and that'll help us get through it. But I'm not going to run from the fact that we have a couple things going on our commission right now that are distractions. That is one. No fault, but our mayor is also running for governor, and that's taking a lot of time, and I think he's focusing on that. We have important decisions ahead of us. We have one coming up this week to talk about potentially moving our police stations. Big discussion. a huge discussion, and so we just need to get ahead of that.
So there's a difference between distraction and the word you used, which was dysfunction.
Well, yeah.
Can you expand on the dysfunction part?
Commissioner Richardson wants to hear it. We had a recent conversation regarding the decision on hiring a city attorney. And that conversation broke down, I felt, to a place that I would rather it not gone. I wanted us to focus on things that I'd been hearing, which is people want us to go outside. People want us to reach out further than just internally. And I think that is important. We're doing it with our city manager position. We're doing it with the city auditor position. We need to do a better job with our city attorney. And that's not to say we may not come back and in the end hire the assistant or the acting city attorney right now. But that argument and that discussion got a little sidetracked, I felt. And I think we need to get back on track. It was a little dysfunctional. It was. And so we need to do a better job.
Okay. Commissioner Richardson, you, in that same story, pushed back on what your colleague said. Do you disagree that there is dysfunction?
I absolutely disagree that there is dysfunction. I'm not sure that Commissioner Ziffer used the right word. There is no dysfunction that I have observed. We work very collegially as a commission. If you look at our meetings, our agenda, most of the items that we deal with, it's a 5-0 vote. Certainly we had some differences, and those were expressed in an open meeting about who we thought was best to assume the city attorney's position, but we were collegial even in that. We respected each other's position. I don't know where it went. That it would have caused us to be dysfunctional. I kept it to simply what I thought were the qualifications of the person who I was recommending for the position. I think she is eminently qualified for that post. I don't know that we'll find anybody in this nation any more qualified than her, but I certainly respected the position of my colleagues. We took a vote. I respected that, and we moved forward. I think we've done an excellent job of providing leadership for this city under the circumstances. I don't feel that the FBI investigation weighs on me at all. I was elected to provide leadership for this city. That's what I'm doing. All of this started before I came to the commission, but certainly it can be a distraction. But we've got work to do as a city to move this community forward, and that's what I stay focused on. I can't focus my time and attention on what the FBI is doing. They've got to do their job, and at the appropriate time, if someone did something inappropriate, they will handle that and the courts will handle that.
So, Commissioner Miller, you, when in your op-ed that ran in our paper announcing that you were not going to run again, talked about the level of discourse. You said that it's at an all-time low, and that was part of your, at least a factor in your decision-making. So it sounds like you might fall in the middle here, or how do you assess this dysfunction and what the board is actually able to get done right now?
Well, the larger community conversation that I referenced in the letter really plays on all of us also. And I mean, we sit there in meeting after meeting hearing people accuse us of all sorts of things with no basis for that. And you know, that's tough to hear. And when it reflects on your family and your family members start being targeted, then, you know, you have to give that a considerable amount of thought. As far as I understand how Commissioner Ziffer feels, but I don't believe that the commission is dysfunctional in any way. We have so many different items that come up before us on a weekly basis. And transportation and planning and projects that are being built all over town and on and on. And I don't feel that FBI hanging over me at any point, and I don't think that is part of, you know, that it affects my decision making or my attention or when I get up in the morning and decide what I'm going to do for the day. And I would like to remind everybody that the FBI was investigating Mayor Marks, and then they were investigating the school board, or not the members, but Jackie Pons. And so it's not exactly a new presence. It's certainly a larger presence than it was before. But that's just one aspect of what we do, and we have so much more work that doesn't intersect with that. That, you know, I think we get along amazingly well. There are five different individuals, just like we have seven over here, and everybody has their own set of whatever that they bring to the table, background and experience and everything else. And so obviously you're going to look at things, just as I said a minute ago, everybody's perspective is somewhat different, which I think is strengthening. But sometimes you get crossways over one element or another. And if that never happened, then it would be a miracle. So I do think the pressure that's the larger pressure of the dynamic that's going on in the community has more of an effect on all of us than the FBI investigation itself.
Okay. You're listening to the Village Square Community Forum, hosted by WFSU Radio Television. Stay with me, we've got more.
Witten Glass has been taking care of business since 1945. When you call Witten Glass, you're dealing with experienced, reliable professionals who offer only the best. Like Witten's top-of-the-line bath enclosures that provide style and luxury at an affordable price. Eye-catching storefronts are a specialty at Witten Glass. We'll help you design it and install it. Witten Glass, the first name in glass replacement. Call 222-5781. When you place a document in someone's hand, it should reach more than their head. It needs to reach their heart with compelling visuals and dramatic presentations right down to the paper it's printed on. Rapid Press reaches the hearts of thousands of people every day with commercial printing and mailing services, for organizations that feed and house children, for businesses that bring vital products and services to our community, and for theaters, festivals, and orchestras reaching bigger audiences and bringing joy to life. Rapid Press, commercial printers since 1983.
For digital printing, offset printing, finishing, and mailing services, reach for Rapid Press. When you're ready to share your vision, excite your customers, and reach the hearts of your audience, reach for Rapid Press. You'll find them online at rapidpress.com or call 893-7346. 893-7346. Rapid Press, the power of print.
Hi, I'm Jerry.
And I'm Pete.
And we're with the Jerry Thigpen Trio, and you're listening to Tallahassee Talks with Brian Cerny.
So here we are, we're listening to outtakes from this two-hour public forum that happened here about a week and a half ago at WFSU Broadcast Center, organized by Village Square folks. Interesting reactions from some of the commissioners, particularly in relation to some of the economic issues, economic development, job creation. Noteworthy that Marianne Lindley was recognized for her contributions. She's going to be stepping away, as is Nancy Miller, not running for another term in seat 3 for the city commission. So both Lindley and Miller are going away from serving in these respective capacities. Anyway, let's continue with our listening to this, and we'll get you the best of the best.
What do you think it is we're doing that is working? And what is it specifically? So I'm really not interested in, you know, broad themes. What specific things should we be doing to keep the momentum going? I see your hand, Zipper?
Sure.
Okay, Zipper, then Dozier, then Miller.
And I don't have the exact numbers on me, but we have a lot. The city, have a lot more police on the street. Mm-hmm. We have a lot more police that are in the communities. Mm-hmm. We have a lot more people that are out there, and we have more in the pipeline coming. And the other thing is that we've done, and I haven't seen the final statistics on this, or the initial statistics, is we started to use cameras. You know, we've had, over the past couple of years, incidences where we've had people killed with dozens, if not more than dozens, of witnesses, and people are reluctant to come forward mm-hmm. because of retribution. And so if people aren't willing to speak up and see what they saw, cameras do that. and we have put cameras in various places within our city, and we seem to have had a reduction in those areas. So the next question is, well, does that crime just move somewhere else? It might, and when we find where it is, we'll move the cameras there.
Okay. We're down to just a couple minutes, so 30 seconds if you can.
Quickly.
I want to get to one more topic.
Yeah, three top things. I think there's increased resources on both city and county side. We do fund the sheriff's department in large, out of our general revenue directed by the sheriff, but in collaboration. There's a lot more collaboration between all of our agencies. I think that was mentioned before. We had a workshop that included the chief of police and the sheriff and many others. But the community engagement, there is a lot more understanding of this and a lot more people, even CRA dedicating money to take down buildings that have been abandoned and might have been a focal point for some crime. This is working on all fronts. It's not just a law enforcement issue. We're making incremental progress, but it's getting better.
Okay, Miller than Maddox. Yes.
The collective that I mentioned before, the collaboration of the law enforcement agencies, new focus on community policing, where the officers really, really bond, attempt to really get to know the people in the communities that they're policing. And also, I think our move to our discussions about moving the police force, we're talking about doing what can be referred to as a community police environment, where there are a lot of other social services attached, and so that we're looking at more of a campus. I think that's going to be a big change over the that building that's over on, I think, 6th or 7th Avenue. So those are three things that I think are either having an effect already or going to continue to have an effect in the future.
Okay,
quickly,
Maddox.
I know, yeah. I don't think we can end this conversation without giving the sheriff and the police chief a little credit. We challenged them to get it done, and they got it done. I think the sheriff's all-in initiative, the collective that you were talking about, those things all added up to, if we got lower numbers, for us to have lower numbers. But then again, I also don't think we can end this conversation without giving you, the citizens, some credit there too. You had to take some of that responsibility on, too, to police yourselves and police each other. We can't do it by ourselves. Law enforcement can't do it by themselves. I think it was a community effort, and we all jumped in together to get it done. And so I think everybody, not just, one branch or the other, got it done.
Real quick?
Yeah, real quick. I've been working with Sheriff McNeil and others on trying to address the people who are in jail now for substance abuse and mental health issues, and we are trying to find some ways to address those problems that people have that get them into jail and keep the revolving door going. So I think we're kind of in a bit of early days, but I think there's going to be some help in that when people are in jail, commit crimes because of substance abuse and or mental health issues, and try to address those problems and keep them from coming right back.
Okay. Real quick, we're just down to a minute or two. The city of Tallahassee recently released two maps showing the change in the city's tree canopy over the last 60 years. Did y'all happen to see this? It was in the mid-50s and then today, and the tree canopy was about 50% larger today than it was 60 years ago. If you saw that, what is your reaction to it, particularly in the light of the story we had a few days ago about some concerns about the new Cascades Park development and the impact it would have on trees?
I say go local government.
Well, first of all, the city is considerably bigger than it was in the 50s. And it's much more urbanized. It's changed in virtually every way. It's changed even in the last 8 years when I've been in office. So I think that is, we've had an emphasis on infill ever since the comprehensive plan was originated in the early 90s, and trying to maximize the use of infrastructure by getting as many people to live in, close to one another, and then you get the inevitable result. But our most recent effort to develop an urban forest management plan will hopefully give us guidance about how we perpetuate our urban forest, because right now a lot of trees are coming down all over town. I have expressed concern over and over about the multimodal district, because that doesn't require as much canopy to be left at the end of the day after the development is in place. Okay. So that would be, I think we do need to look at it.
Okay, Deloge, did you
You said the canopy is bigger, meaning
right.
We have, frankly,
yeah,
not as a city.
Yeah, there was more tree coverage today than there was a few years ago.
It's a testament to the people in the community that every time we go down that path, I mean, the Canopy Roads Committee is brutal for developers. The people out there, I mean, people step up. I mean, the ad you ran the other day with the North American Properties off Cascades Park, I mean, people, you know, they feel strongly about the trees in this community, so clearly something's working.
If I could just say this very quickly, all you have to do is go out to Southwood, and 15 years ago, there wasn't a single tree on any of those roads. And you go on some of those roads 15 years later, and there's a canopy over the entire road. Many parts of our city 50 years ago didn't have trees. Trees have been planted, they have grown. And that's one of the reasons why it's so much broader than it was.
Everybody still here, still supporting the Cascades project, the CRA project?
Yes.
Okay, all right. And the other two as well.
I think it's important for people to understand that property, this can't be done in 30 seconds, but that
uh-oh,
property.
Well, that's all you got.
that property that is part of a CRA issue. We have two CRAs. That's just like me and Commissioner Richardson. I used a piece of his property to trade to FSU to get that piece of property. So that piece of property, that the downtown CRA owes money to the front, considerable money, and it always had to be sold for development.
Okay.
Tallahassee Talks with Brian Cerny. We're the production of Alcom Media and Entertainment, coming to you from the studios of Moose Magnificat Radio. Online at moosemagnificat.com. Our executive producer is Carl Cerny. He does a fabulous job for us. He's amazing. And our associate producer is Alexandra Blackwell, and along with co-host and associate producer Miriam Dady. We will be looking for you again next week. So come on, Tallahassee. Come talk to me.
So if you come to me and say, I want to buy a home, the first thing I do is say, okay, let's talk about the process. What can I afford? Not just the purchase price. What kind of lifestyle do you want to have?
Tiffany Hamilton, broker of Eck and Hamilton Realty, talking about the real estate market in Tallahassee.
Right now, for an investor, in my opinion, we should be looking at affordable housing. What that means is a price point of about $100,000 to $200,000 price range. For the investor, it's a rental income between $1,000 and $1,500 a month max.
Realtor, broker, consultant, Tiffany Hamilton is helping home buyers, investors, and other realtors achieve their individual goals.
Hi, I'm Tiffany Hamilton. Investing in real estate or buying a home has never been more challenging. Even finding solid information you can trust can also be a challenge. That's exactly why I began my career nearly 15 years ago, to help buyers and sellers overcome those challenges. As a broker, as a realtor, or a consultant, if I can help you achieve your goals, it would be my pleasure.
Call 850-366-8433 or online at tiffanyhamilton.com.